How's everyone doing out there? We have a lot to talk about today. It's Sunday, May 6th. This is The World According To. I'm your host, Dave Mignano. And we're going to get right down to business here. We have a good amount of sports to talk about. We have John Romola coming on here at around 12:30, as always. And we're going to talk about some Mariano Rivera, about what this means for the Yankees, what it means for his career. He has said he's going to come back now. He's not retiring. He's most likely pulling a Chipper Jones. We'll get into that later. We're going to kind of review where we are in the NBA and the NHL playoffs. The defending champion Mavericks are already eliminated. They got knocked out last night by the Thunder. The Thunder had a clean sweep of them. The Knicks are on their way out as well. But first, I want to start off talking here about this fight last night, this Floyd Mayweather Miguel Cotto fight. I don't know if you've seen it, if you've seen the highlights, if you saw the analysis, ESPN, HBO, whatever you happen to watch it on, if you happen to watch it at all. This was obviously one of the tougher fights for Floyd Mayweather. He obviously got the victory, got the belt, all that good stuff. But I really want to talk quickly, and I'm not going to stay too long on this because I know a lot of people, pretty much including myself, really don't want to talk about Floyd Mayweather unless he's fighting Manny Pacquiao. But it really kind of hit on me last night that I actually do see this this Floyd Mayweather-Manny Pacquiao fight happening. I see it happening probably within the next year and a half. And the reason I say that is because if you didn't know, Floyd Mayweather is going to prison on June 1st. He's serving a 87-day sentence. He'll probably get out in maybe 40, 45, 30 maybe. No, he's not going to be in there for too long. But I personally see Mayweather taking this fight, this Manny Pacquiao fight, and kind of exporting it till after this jail. Well, it has to be exported till after this jail sentence now. But kind of dragging it out as much as he can for the simple reason of he wants to kind of set up an excuse for him. He wants to give himself an excuse. I'm not going to say he's scared of Pacquiao. I don't think he's scared of Pacquiao. I don't want to say that he doesn't think he can beat Pacquiao. I think Mayweather has shown that he feels he can beat anybody, and that's a good thing to have. I mean, you can't go into a fight thinking you can't beat somebody. But I also think that Mayweather knows that Pacquiao is going to be his best fight. It's going to be the best opportunity for Mayweather to lose that undefeated streak, to, I guess, lose the title of pound-for-pound best fighter, although currently I don't even think he has it. I give it to Pacquiao. I know some people give it to Pacquiao. Some people give it to Mayweather. Give me a call, by the way, 760-283-0846. Let me know what you think. Do you think Pacquiao or Mayweather is the better fighter? But anyway, I think he's setting it up where he comes back. He's obviously a little bit older. He's probably lost a little bit of a step. He's still obviously a great fighter. There's no question about that. I'm not trying to say he's not a good fighter. But he knows that Pacquiao is the best chance to give him a loss. And he's setting it up where if he loses, he gives himself the excuse of, well, I'm out of shape. I'm past my prime. He didn't fight me in my prime. But Floyd, this fight has been going on for so long. And Mayweather's ducking him. There's no way around it. Mayweather is ducking Manny Pacquiao. First, Floyd wanted drug testing. Pacquiao eventually agreed to drug testing. Then Floyd wants a 60-40 split of the prize money, which will be the richest prize pool in boxing history. Why would Pacquiao ever agree to that? Think about it. Let's just say that this fight, and I'm just going to throw numbers out there, probably would be more, maybe a little bit less, but whatever. Let's say this fight brings in $200 million, right? If Mayweather's getting a 60 split, he's getting $120 million. Is he really that much better than Pacquiao? Is he really that much more valued? Pacquiao would only be getting $80 million. Now, yes, I'm saying only $80 million. But let's put it into perspective. If you're Pacquiao, why are you going to take $40 million less than Mayweather? Why would you do that? You're just as big of a draw to this fight as he is. It's a contract. It's a sign that Mayweather, I'm sorry, that Pacquiao can't accept. He can't. So it's almost like what the Yankees did with Joe Torre. They give him a contract offer he can't accept. Then, of course, there's more of this, more of that. But then last week I read that Mayweather doesn't want to fight Pacquiao because he's scared of his health. Come on. Really? Can we be original here? You're scared of your health in a boxing match? Really? The asinine possibilities of that are endless. I'm sure you can figure them out. So I do think this fight's going to happen. I do think a bunch of people are going to buy it. I think that both are going to be a little past their prime, so it's not going to be one of those situations where Pacquiao is a lot stronger than Mayweather. And I think it's going to be a situation where, at the end of the day, we're looking at two out-of-their-prime boxers, two top-of-the-line boxers who are going to get the biggest prize money in boxing history, and we're going to have a bunch of excuses if Mayweather loses. And you know what? If Mayweather loses and he comes out and says, you know what, Pacquiao beat me fair and square, I'll take all this back. I'll give Mayweather the respect that I don't give him right now. But I just don't see that happening. I don't see Mayweather coming out and saying, Pacquiao beat me fair and square, and he was the better fighter. I see him coming out and saying, well, I was in jail, and I couldn't train, and I was past my prime, and all this good stuff. Hey, I don't know the man personally. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. That's what I feel. That's what I get off his vibe from his previous encounters with the sports world. I guess we'll have to see. I could be completely wrong, and maybe they won't even fight. I don't know. Don't know. It's over with. Let's move on. Congratulations to Mayweather, though, on his victory of Cotto last night. Typical Mayweather fight. Wasn't really offensive. Mostly a defensive fight. Got his punches in when he needed to, and took his unanimous decision home. So let's run down the basketball schedule today. We have four games on tap at 1 o'clock, so pretty much starting in about 53 minutes, we have the Bulls at the 76ers. Philly actually leads that series 2-1. We're seeing the Derrick Rose effect, and I think it's pretty obvious or pretty fair to say that the 76ers are probably the favorites in this matchup now. But Philadelphia, Chicago at 1 o'clock, Philly leads that series 2-1. Then at 3:30, the Knicks host the Miami Heat. Obviously, we have a game-time decision for Amari Stoudemire. I don't think he's going to play, or even if he does play, he's not going to be 100%. And even at 100%, or the variation of 100% he was currently at, it's not much to offer. So expect the Miami Heat to take the series tonight, to sweep the Knicks, and send them to their 14th straight playoff loss. And an interesting little fact, and I forget the exact number, but The last time the Knicks won a playoff game, just think about this. The last time the Knicks won a playoff game, Derek Jeter had 1,039 hits. Just a little fact to throw out there. 7 o'clock, you have the Atlanta Hawks taking on the Boston Celtics in Boston. Boston leads that series 2-1. And at 9:30 tonight, you have the Lakers taking on Denver, with L.A. leading that series 2-1. Obviously, we said I think Philly has the inside track here on the Bulls. I clearly see Miami sweeping the Knicks today. If they play all their players, I could also see them just kind of saying, you know, we'll see what happens. But they're going to win that series no matter what. The 7 o'clock game was a little bit interesting because Boston does have a 2-1 lead. I think a lot of people did write off Boston, especially after the Rajon Rondo suspension. But they are facing the Hawks at home. They are playing pretty well. So I think Boston's going to take this game. I think they'll probably end up taking the series. And then L.A. is going to win that series out there against the Nuggets. Now, the thing about L.A. is that Bynum has been playing so well. And if he's going to play as well as he has, they're going to be a very tough team to beat. Doesn't matter where they were slotted. Doesn't matter where they were. Their official finish of the season was. They're going to be the team to beat out in the Western Conference. Now, I know you want to say the Thunder. Thunder are playing well. I still think the Thunder are going to represent the Western Conference in the finals. But Bynum has been playing out of control. He's showing himself off to be the dominant center in these playoffs, and probably the dominant center in the NBA right now, with Dwight Howard having his injury issues this year. The question with Bynum is, as it always is, it's not the talent, it's not the size, it's the drive, it's the inconsistency. Can Bynum play consistent? I don't know. You don't know. I don't even think he knows. But if you have Kobe Bryant playing as well as he's playing, if you have Andrew Bynum playing as well as he's playing, if you have Pau Gasol just, you know, playing the role player like he has kind of been, they're going to be a very, very tough team to beat, a team that's not really going to be beatable. I'm not even sure if the Thunder can match up to the Lakers if Bynum is playing the way he's been playing. Again, maybe he won't play that well. As a Lakers fan, that's got to be very frustrating. It's very frustrating as any sports fan to see a player on a team you root for be so talented and control so much of the team's success and to be so inconsistent. I'm trying to think of an example. I think a very good example is as a Cowboys fan is looking at Tony Romo. I mean, you watch Tony Romo, and it's very frustrating. Now, I'm not going to put last year on Romo for the simple fact that he had, I think, his best year of his career. I think he took a step forward. The problem last year was the defense. The Cowboys got ahead early. They kind of shut it down, as most teams do, tried to run the clock out. But you know what? When you're in a terrible secondary and teams that go into throwdown mode start throwing the ball over the field and making completions, stuff's going to happen. But before that, his failures in the playoffs in December in crunch time are obviously well documented. Very frustrating. It's very frustrating to see a player with so much talent that really controls the team you root for his destiny fail or be inconsistent. For the Lakers fans, obviously you want Bynum to play well. If you're any other team fan, you kind of want Bynum to slip back into that rage and that I don't even know the word, but almost like David Banner in The Incredible Hulk for all those Avenger fans that saw the movie this weekend. You know, if he's playing like David Banner, they're not going to win. If he's playing like the Hulk, they're going to win. Simple as that. I think it's a very simple equation. We're going to have to see. We're going to settle down some. We're going to shake out some more playoff matchups. Like I said, the Heat will win. I think Boston and L.A. take a three. I think actually Boston, L.A., and Philly all take a 3-1 series lead. So that should be a pretty good indication of how the season's going to go. I really don't see how the Bulls can win this game with Derrick Rose out. Joakim Noah is also out. And the injury bug just got him. It's as simple as that. It happens to all teams. We're going to talk about the injury bug a little bit later on with John O'Mullig about Mariano Rivera. I want to give my two cents about him before he gets on the air. We'll do that around 12:20, so in about 5 more minutes. Then John's coming on at 2:30, and we're going to ask him what he thinks from outside of the New York metropolitan area. Also, I want to hear what you think. How do you feel about Mariano missing the rest of the year? Missing the rest of the year the way he did? Give me a call, 760-283-0846. If you're not a fan of the Yankees, if you're a Mets fan, a Red Sox fan, an Angels fan, a Houston Astros fan, how do you feel about the greatest closer of all time missing the rest of the year? Are you one of those guys or girls that thinks it's a shame because you're putting one of the best players, one of the greatest players in the history of the game on the DL? Or are you one of those people that says, good, he's out, this gives our team a shot to win? I want to hear from you. Let me know. Personally, and I'm just going to go right into it now because there's a lot to talk about because of how great he is. Because of, I think, what this season meant to him in terms of retiring, I really do believe that this was going to be his farewell tour. I really believe that he was going to ride off into the sunset at the age of 42. He was going to retire at 42 while he retired the number 42. And it didn't happen. You know, it's really a rough way to have it happen. The idea that he was just shagging fly balls, something he's done for 20 years before games, kind of uses it to get his cardio and his running in. And he tears an ACL and a meniscus. It's really a freak injury. It could happen to anybody at any time. Some people I've heard want to say, you know, why did he have to jump for that ball? the running is one thing, with the jumping is the one, is another thing. It's a whole, it's like Martin Matico when he was celebrating for no reason. It's something that anybody would have done, any athlete would have done, any baseball player would have done. You try to catch the ball. It's just, it's part of your competitive nature. You can't sit there and say, I'm going to tear my ACL by jumping for this ball. It just happens. I would have done it. I'm pretty sure anybody else in the Yankees would have done it. And it just it's a freak injury. If you saw A-Rod's, just a thought. If you happen to see A-Rod's reaction when Rivera went down, he looked like Rivera got shot. I mean, he really looked scared. And if you're the Yankee fans, if you're a Yankee player, you kind of have to be scared, because now your bullpen, the depth that was supposed to be a key factor for your team this year is now in shambles. You're having Jabba, who we don't know if he's going to come back. My guess is if he does, it will not be before late August or early September. And who knows how effective he's going to be. I think it's pretty fair to say that Jabba has not been one of your more trusted closers or more trusted relief pitchers in the last few years. You have to put David Robertson or Rafael Soriano in the bullpen role. Now, I think Robinson is going to get the call. I think he deserves the call. He has been the Yankees' second-best relief pitcher, and actually probably their best relief pitcher over the last 2 years. But can he handle the closer's role? Can he be that guy that can step in and take Rivera's job? The closer's role is a whole different animal. Maybe you don't understand why, but it's a whole different animal than the eighth inning and seventh inning. Now, the good thing is that Robinson has shown and has proven that he can handle tough spots. He has come into, over the last 2 years, an unbelievable amount of one-run, two-run games, bases loaded, nobody out, and he just gets out of it somehow. He's smoking mirrors, gets people to strike out, gets them to pop up to the infield, and he gets the job done. And you have to give him credit where credit is due. I think that's a very good indication that he probably can handle this role. If you wanted to give it to Soriano, though, I wouldn't, put it against the Yankees. He's making the big money. He obviously was a closer before. He had a good amount of success as the closer, but he hasn't had a great amount of success as the Yankee. Rafael Soriano is an emotional guy. This is the market and the sports world where emotions easily come out. Do you think Soriano could hold that role? Let me know. 760-283-0846. The Yankees are kind of turning to a number of other young players in his bullpen role. Phil Hughes is possibly going to get slid back to the bullpen role once Andy Pettitte comes back. I mean, there's so many variables that could happen here. I don't think anybody can really pick. I don't even think that Joe Torre knows exactly what's going to happen. I think that it's going to be a kind of a situation where Girardi's going to have to sit down and kind of see how things shake out. Do the Yankees make a move here for a player? What kind of options are on the market? What kind of teams? What teams would want to trade? What do the Yankees have to trade for a top reliever? I mean, obviously teams know that if the Yankees are on the market, they're looking for, or they're kind of desperate for a guy. That means that they can run the price up a little bit. At least I would if I was a GM. What closers are on the market? What teams would be willing to trade? Obviously, you have to have a team that's kind of already out of it, a team that's not expected to compete. One name I have heard and could be a decent option is Brandon League, formerly of the Toronto Blue Jays, so he knows the AL East. He knows the scrutiny. Obviously, it's a little different in New York, but he at least has an idea of teams he will be facing. He now pitches for the Mariners. He closes for the Mariners, and he's doing a great job out there. Obviously, the AL West is not the AL East, although the Rangers have one of the best offenses in baseball, and the Angels are supposed to have one. Obviously, that's not working out too well right now. But League is one of the better options in the AL. He currently has 2.77 ERA, so I guess if Robertson and Soriano are struggle, they could go out and try to get him. Another name I heard was Houston Street of the Padres. Now, I'm not personally a big fan of Houston Street. He is a serviceable closer, but he's never been the dominating closer. And he's pitching out there in Petco right now, which kind of inflates his numbers. He also recently got hurt. So I don't think the Yankees will go after him. A name that I put out there is Joe Hanrahan of the Pittsburgh Pirates, formerly of the Washington Nationals. He has quietly been one of, if not the most dominating closer in baseball over the last 2 years. He's kind of struggling a little bit this year. His ERA is a little bit high this year. He doesn't get that many save opportunities because the Pirates' offense is so bad this year. But he's a guy that can come in, he throws 97 to 99 miles an hour, can touch 100. I've seen him pitch in Washington. I was actually down there at a game one day a couple years ago, and he was the Nationals, I want to say it was their seventh inning guy, and he came in, he starts throwing 98, 99, just 1-2-3, blows down the team they were facing. I can't even remember what team they were facing. I think it was the Astros, but he just blows them down, and I'm thinking this guy is going to be a good pitcher, and he's been a pretty good pitcher for the Pirates. Obviously, the Pirates, I don't think, are going to be in contention this year, but I think Hanrahan can be a player that they can move. The good thing about Hanrahan is that he is under team control through 2013. He's not a type of guy who is going to be a free agent and run. So you have him for the rest of this year and next year. You can never have enough bullpen guys. Obviously, the Yankees can tell you that right now. But that also has to ask the question, will the Pirates trade him? Will the Pirates want too much? As I just said, the Yankees are going to kind of have to maybe overpay a little bit because teams know the Yankees are kind of desperate for a reliever. Well, now you're getting a reliever that's under control for 2 years, essentially, or a year plus. And the Yankees might not have the chips to do that. They might not want to do that. They might just say, hey, you know, we have enough here. Another person possibly is Grant Balfour out in Oakland. He was a good pitcher for the Rays. He was never a closer for the Rays. Now he's out there closing in the AL West. I just don't know if I trust Grant Balfour. He has injury issues. As far as I know, he's never really been consistent. Maybe he has been consistent if you want to sit here and say that he's one of the better relief pitchers for the Rays. Watching him face the Yankees, I don't know. He never gave me that overpowering, dominating stuff. He had days where He obviously shut down the Yankees and shut down other AL East teams, but he always seemed to, I don't know, I guess sometimes you get this vibe from a pitcher that he's in control, and Grant Balfour never gave me that vibe that he was in control. I don't know if I would want him if I was a Yankees, or I am a Yankees fan, but I don't know if I would want him as a Yankees fan. I'm sure some people do. I'm sure some people just want to get anybody in there besides David Robertson. Even though I haven't seen Robertson do the job yet. Robertson can come out here and do fine. Maybe he struggles. Maybe they put Soriano in. And maybe Soriano does fine. I mean, the Yankees still do have options. They don't necessarily have to make a trade. I think a lot of people in New York, especially, you know, I live here in the tri-state market, a lot of people in New York are panicking because all they hear is Mariano Rivera injured. They don't know what it's like to have Mariano Rivera not in the closer role. I mean, if you take a kid who is, you know, of pretty good age. We're in 2012. Mariano Rivera made his debut in 1996 as the closer. Don't start calling me saying he was a starter and yeah, all that good stuff. He was in 96. He was the setup man for Wetland. 97, he started to become the closer. So let's take a kid who's 16 years old. That means he was born in 96, the year that Rivera started out in the bullpen, setting up for Wetland. Wow, it's been 16 years since 1996. Wow, that's a long time. It just really hit me that I'm getting up there in age. Sorry about that. But, so you take a 16-year-old kid, you figure 6 years for him to actually understand baseball, start to really follow baseball if he turns into a Yankees fan. So for the last 10 years, all he has known is Mariano Rivera. Or she, but all this person has known is Mariano Rivera. All they know is that they have the most, or one of the most automatic closers in baseball history. They have the most dominating closer in baseball history. They have one of the most dominating pitchers in baseball history. They know that they have they're watching the best postseason pitcher of all time. 42 saves in the postseason under like a 1 ERA or just above a 1 ERA. A Yankee fan that is 16 years old or even 18 years old, that fan does not know I guess you could say, the pain of not having a closer. And guess what? I'm 24 years old, and I don't even know it. Because when I was old enough to start following baseball, Mariano Rivera was just becoming a big bullpen guy. My first real memory of baseball is in 96. Yankees win the World Series, obviously. John Wetland's being set up by Rivera. Rivera goes 7-8, Wetland 9, and 97 Mariano takes over. So I don't really even, I guess, know the struggles of not having Mariano Rivera as a closer. Now, being someone who's very interested in sports, being someone who follows the sports world very closely, I do see other teams have those bullpen issues, and I can understand the frustration that teams have, but I guess it's a feeling. And we're going to talk to John about this when he comes on, because he's got a situation with the team he roots for where he had Todd Jones as the closer, which is always a shaky step. Right now, Jose Valverde, even though he went perfect last year, he's kind of having a shaky step, and Valverde is more of a shaky pitcher than he is the perfect pitcher we saw last year. But Yankee fans, you know, Mariano comes in, and more often than not, you can shut the door. I mean, you can, you know, count the times that Mariano comes in and does not do the job. You can't say that anymore. And even if the Yankees do trade for a closer, do trade for a Brandon League, you can't say that, oh, man, the door is shut when David Robertson comes in. Now, you know, if Robertson comes in and he goes, say, 20 for 20, and now we're in July, and he's sporting a 1.3 ERA, he's got 23 saves and 23 chances, then, yeah, you can feel pretty comfortable. But what about the playoffs? Does David Robertson give you that confidence in the playoffs that the Yankee fans had when Rivera comes in? Give me a call. Tell me what you think. 760-283-0846. Tell me what you think about it. What do you think, if you're a Yankee fan, what do you think the loss of Rivera means to the team? If you're a Red Sox fan, if you're a Tampa Bay Rays fan, if you're a Mets fan, what do you think the loss of Mariano Rivera means to this team? Can the Yankees recover? Can the Yankees outslug other teams to the point where they don't have to worry about closing too much? I mean, the Yankees are coming into the season here, and they were supposed to have their strength with their pitching. You have now, you shore up that rotation with CeCe and Carota and Hughes and Miguel Pineda and whoever the fifth starter was going to be. And, you know, Ivan Nova, Freddy Garcia. Now you're really shaking if you're a Yankees fan. You have the bullpen, Jabba, Logan, Robertson, Rivera. It's in shambles. CeCe's getting back on track. Pineda, we all know, is hurt. He's done for the year. Rivera's now done for the year. Carota's having his good and bad days, but he's not looking like, you know, the number two that the Yankees expected to get so far. He may be still getting used to the league, but you know what? Coming from the AL or the NL West, which is the worst hitting offense of the division, to the AL East, which is the best hitting offensive division, well, it's going to take time to adjust, and it might not even happen. Maybe his stuff isn't as good as people thought. I don't know. I'm not saying he is or isn't. He's done a good job. He's done a bad job. Yesterday was a bad job. The outing before that was a good job. But I don't think he's going to be that dominating performer that many people expected him to be. Ivan Nova is struggling a little bit. He's kind of having a sophomore slump here. Very, very tough times for this Yankees team in terms of pitching. Also, the Yankees are struggling with offense. Robinson Cano is not the MVP candidate that many people expected him to be. Alex Rodriguez is getting older and older and older. Now, Jeter, hats off to Derek Jeter. He's been playing better than he probably has in the last 7 years. He's faster. He's hitting great. You really can't. It's hard to say that. It's hard to put into words what's going on with Derek Jeter. So give him credit where credit is due. Jeter batting 390. Swisher 284. probably better than most people thought with Curtis Granderson. He's kind of on a decline. I don't want to say on a decline. It's a bad word to say. He's not hitting as well. Yes, he has a lot of home runs. He has 9 of them. He's the team by far. But he's only batting .279. A-Rod batting .260 with 4 home runs. He is on the decline and looks to be on the decline fast. It's going to be interesting to see how the last years of this contract goes with all these A-Rod injuries. His defense at third is becoming worse and worse every year. And essentially, Yankee fans, you're going to be seeing one of the greatest players of all time start to really decline here. You know, Father Time is catching up to him. Robinson Cano, .255, 1 home run, 4 RBIs. I mean, 8 walks and 14 strikeouts. That's not going to get the job done for Robbie Cano. Raul Ibanez, supposed to come in here and be the DH, batting .239. Mark Teixeira, batting .229 with 4 home runs. I mean, you're really not getting any production out of these hitters. Russell Martin batting .206. Now, the Yankees are still above .500. They're still 14-13. Very conspicuous times here if you're a Yankee fan. Are you worried if you're a Yankee fan? Are you concerned that the team can't turn it around? Are you concerned that the Yankees are in fourth place? Are you concerned that Tampa Bay's pitching is looking great and they're off to a 19-9 start? Are you concerned that Baltimore's off to an 18-9 start? Now, if anybody here thinks I'm trying to say that Baltimore is going to be a threat for the playoffs, I'm not. But are they showing the Yankees and the Red Sox and then the other AL East teams that they're going to be kind of a spoiler here? Are you concerned that Toronto, with all their offensive struggles, is still 16-12? Now, let's get it right, folks. It's still very, 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 very early. Very early. The Yankees are not out of it. If you look around the league, the consensus favorite for the AL Central title, the Detroit Tigers, they're not in first place either. We're going to talk to Jono about that. The Yankees easily can go on a run here. Same with the Red Sox. You know, the Red Sox did snap off 6 straight, although they have a lot more problems than the Yankees with their injuries and their pitching problems and their managerial problems. Personally, I think this is going to be a bad year for Boston. They recently won, I think, 7 straight after the Yankees came back from that 9-0 deficit. Now they've lost 4 straight. Boston's really going to be out of it, in my opinion. This could be Tampa's division to win, though. Tampa's young. They're healthy. They don't hit as well as the Yankees, although they're not supposed to. But you know what? The way the Yankees' offense is going, they are. Do you think it's age? I mean, he's years old, but he's playing better than ever. Cano's not old, and he's struggling. Russell Martin's getting up there in age. Teixeira's getting up there in age. And I think one of the things you see with Mark Teixeira is, if you didn't know, he used to be a very, very big average guy. He used to be one of those guys that would consistently hit around or above 300. So now you look at his stats last year, he's hitting .230, .250. Right now he's hitting under .230, he's hitting .220. Let me pulling up his stats right now. I'm going to go down every year for Mark Teixeira's average. First year in the league, 2003, .259 average. Okay, it's his rookie year. 2004 with the Rangers, .281. 301, 282, 297, 317, 283, 358, 292, he comes to the Yankees, 292, 256, 248, 229 so far this year. Well, what's the common factor here? Why is Teixeira's average numbers gone down so much when he hit 358? I'm sorry. Take that back. He hit 358 in 54 games with the Angels after getting traded by the Braves. That combined year, he hit 310. So, what is the common factor here that he even comes in as a Yankees first baseman? Hits .292, hits 39 home runs, 122 RBIs. Next year, .256, 33 home runs, 108 RBIs. Next year, .248, 39 home runs, 111 RBIs. Obviously, the power numbers aren't going anywhere. He still has all this power. So what has changed? why is his offensive production in terms of the average department gone down so much? Also, why has his on-base percentage gone down so much? Let's review the on-base percentage. 331, 370, 379, 371, 397, 404, 390. Now he comes to the Yankees. 383, 365, 341, 270. What has changed here? If you're a realist, you know, he's only 32 years old. He's not old. He's still one of the best defensive players in the league, so he's not losing athletic ability. What is the reason for this downfall? It has to be that he is jacking up for that short porch in left field. Right field, I'm sorry. He has to be just jacking up. That's why you're seeing players put the shift on him. That's why you see him get dropped on the fifth. The Yankees need Mark Teixeira to figure out that he doesn't have to hit home runs all the time. He needs to figure out that if he's good enough to hit for average and hit for home runs, he's not the same player he was because he's dropping that shoulder and just trying to drive the ball out of the ballpark. Yes, A-Rod's physically on the decline. Teixeira's not. Teixeira's mentally, and again, I'm not trying to get inside this guy's head, but he's mentally trying to jack the ball. At least I think he is. At least his swing shows that. At least the numbers show that. We're joined here by General Mola. General, how are you doing today, buddy?
Oh, I'm feeling great, man. How are you?
Let me ask you, from the outside looking in, we're kind of talking about the Yankees' offensive struggles, and I'm going over to Teixeira right now, and how, since he's come to the Yankees, his offensive production in terms of average and on-base percentage have drastically been reduced. Just in his 4 years as a Yankee, 292, 256, 248, and now he's batting 229 for the average perspective. His on-base percentage is 383, 365, 341, and currently it's at 271. From the outside looking in, why do you think Teixeira has, in terms of the average and on-base percentage, been significantly reduced?
You know, I think you hit on a little bit there with the power numbers, how he's continued to hit home runs and he's trying to jack it out of the field as much as he possibly can. But at the same time, I think he is getting a little bit older, where his swing is just as fast, but his reaction time, I think, is going down just a little bit. And if you mess with somebody's reaction time, if they're off just by a split second in baseball, it's so much harder to hit it. And so he might be a little bit behind. Maybe he's a little bit ahead because he's trying to overcompensate for it. So I think if his reaction time is going down a little bit, now he's just going to have to figure out when he needs to start his swing, because it's there. His bat speed's still there. He's shown that with how many home runs he still hit. But it's just his reaction time that's a little bit off.
Now, we're going to go talk about Mariano Rivera in a little bit, but we're kind of talking about if the Yankees fans should be concerned with this team's start, with how bad their pitching is, with how bad their offense has been, with how bad the bullpen situation is. Again, from an outsider looking in, what do you take from the Yankees' first month? What do you see? How do you see them finishing? Can they turn this around, or is this going to be kind of a season-long scenario?
Well, I'm not as concerned. I wouldn't be concerned if I was a Yankee fan about making the playoffs, especially with two playoff wild card teams. That's going to go down. That, like, their chances of making the playoffs have already gone up significantly because of that. So I think they're going to be just fine. Now, as far as, like, Mariano's legacy as a Yankee, you can't really take anything away from that. He doesn't want to go out like that. He said that. Everyone around the league knows that he doesn't want to just end the season right now and have this be his career. He wants to have a farewell tour, kind of like Chipper Jones, even though I don't think he's going to stay healthy the whole year. He's going to have at least one final year where everybody knows he's going to retire and have everybody say goodbye to him in the proper way. I think that's the way it needs to be. But, yeah, I wouldn't be that concerned just because of that second wild card team. But it's going to be interesting down the stretch. I mean, Baltimore's obviously not going to hold up. It's obvious to me that they're not going to hold up their nice little streak that they've got going on here. Everything is kind of it's early, and so people are going haywire, but I don't know if anybody's going to actually be able to keep it up.
Now, I said it's obviously a struggle for the Yankees that Rivera is out. I also said, even, you know, me at the age of 24, really no Yankee fan under the age of 25 has known what it's like to have a closer where you can't consistently trust. Can you try to, and I'm sorry to do this to you, buddy, but can you try to explain what it's like to have a closer like a Todd Jones or even right now a Jose Valverde where the guy comes in and you can't bank on it? How does that, as a baseball fan, what does that feel like?
It just scares you every time. I mean, yeah, the people under 25 don't really know what it was like to have a playoff game that was seven innings long, because as soon as you got to the eighth, Rivera came in and shut it down for two innings. But it's scary. Every time you go out there, you never know what's going to happen. It scares you every time. And, I mean, at least with Todd Jones, for the most part, he might have scared you for a while, but he got it done. He didn't blow that many saves. He obviously wasn't the best closer in the league, but he was a guy who just went in there and gave every ounce of energy that he possibly could. But, I mean, you never feel like any lead is safe. You always want to score more runs. You always want to pile on more. You go into the ninth inning, and it's just scary. Valverde's kind of going through some struggles right now, where he went 49 for 49 last year. Now he's blown two saves already, you know, and it's still May. So we'll see what's going to happen to him by the end of the year. But the main thing is your offense can never let up. That's what fans feel, is that they always need more runs. If it's five runs, you need seven. If it's seven, you need 10, and you always need more runs. And it's scary anytime you go into the ninth inning and you're only up by one.
Now, I've heard a lot of teams, especially after this Rivera injury, a lot of reports have come out, teams like the Braves that have said that if they had, you know, former Braves, that if they had Rivera instead of the Yankees, they would have been the team in the 90s. What do you think this loss of Rivera means for the Yankees overall? How do you see that affecting their final win total? How do you see it affecting them in the playoffs?
Well, it's definitely going to affect them. Like I said, no lead is ever going to be safe. And so they've obviously been struggling a little bit offensively. You mentioned a lot of their guys getting older, like A-Rod, Jeter, Teixeira. And so their offensive numbers aren't what they used to be. And that's what needs to happen. It's gonna affect them overall in their win total. And then it's going to affect them in the playoffs, because you can't get to the ninth inning and know that it's completely shut down. Now, maybe it is, like you said, it's early. It's still May. Maybe they find a guy who can replace Rivera, and obviously he's not going to be the same guy. He's not going to be as confident going into the last inning. But maybe they do find somebody who can be that one that just shuts it down in the ninth, takes care of business. Next year, maybe he's a setup man grooming himself for the closer job after Rivera comes back, and you got a pretty good, nice little 1-2 combination for next year. But it's all about who they're going to put in that position. And it's a no-win situation for that guy, whoever comes in. It kind of sucks if you're going to be in that position, because you're following up Mariano Rivera and everyone's going to expect him to be him. It's just not going to happen.
Now, what if – I kind of was talking about this earlier. What if the Yankees decide they don't have what it takes within the organization – to have a closer, who do you see the Yankees going out and trying to get? Is there anybody you think that would be a good fit, or should the Yankees just stay within the organization?
I think because they're expecting Rivera to come back next year, they're going to stay within in-house here. Now, if they start struggling and they can't figure it out, and, you know, bullpen by committee, closer by committee doesn't really work out for them, or if they can't really find one guy, then all right, they might start looking around. I don't really know who they would even begin to look at, because I think the shock of the loss is still out there. But I expect them to keep this in-house.
Okay. Now, we were talking again about the Yankees' early struggles. They're fourth in the division. They're 14-13. Another team that's having a little bit of struggles and not playing up to potential is the Detroit Tigers. Give me your opinion on what's going on over there. Why are they 13-13, and why are they in second place, and what do you see going on for the rest of the year?
Well, yeah, you kind of hit on it with the bullpen situation. I think they're both kind of in the same boat. I mean, you saw Verlander throwing some absolute gems, and they haven't been able to close it out for him. He's gotten a lot of no decisions by only allowing two runs through 7-8 innings. That's just hard to swallow, especially for a starting pitcher. But I think it is mainly the bullpen right now for the Tigers. Losing Brandon Inge, I think from the outsider's perspective, Inge wasn't that really good of a guy. He was great defensively. He was always a Gold Glove candidate. But he didn't really matter much at the plate. But if you were around the Tigers from when they struggled, you know, losing 119 games less than 10 years ago, and then going through all these things, Inge was a constant, like, just he was the Tiger. He was a catcher. He moved to third base willingly. He was willing to go to second base this year if he had to. And so from a clubhouse perspective, that's still kind of wearing him. And the same thing with Victor Martinez from getting hurt pretty much for this whole year. They're still trying to figure out who they are, from an offensive perspective, and then their bullpen just needs to needs some help. And I think once they get Doug Fister back, he's going to come back into the rotation and know who they're going to have, you know, from every single day who's going out there. It's going to be a lot more consistent for them, and they'll hit their stride coming in the summer.
Now, do you see any concerns for that pitching staff because of how much like Max Scherzer and people like that have struggled? Obviously, Verlander is still a beast, but do you see them having to maybe make a move for this starting rotation, or are they going to get it together?
It's all going to depend on how good Fister is when he comes back, and then you're going to have, you know, these guys. You're going to have Verlander, Scherzer, you have Fister in there. You have Rick Purcell, who's done pretty decent starting up. And then you got the rookie Smiley, who I think is going to be a really good pitcher. And then once you have those five guys in, it's all going to depend on how Doug Fister does coming back. If they need to make a move, they might. I think they're going to have to make a bullpen move. But they still trust Valverde. And Wieland is a guy who's so loyal to his guys. He never wants to take Verlander out. You can kind of tell every single time he goes out there and lets him pitch 125 pitches a game. It kind of scares the heck out of me, but he continues to do what he does, so I can't really complain about it. He's going to stick with Valverde as long as he possibly can, but they're going to need somebody in the middle relief to short relief and especially a setup guy.
Now, why do you think that a lot of teams that were expected to do well this year are kind of struggling early on? You look at the Yankees, you look at the Red Sox, you look at somewhat the Tigers, the Giants, the Marlins are a big name, the Angels. Why do you think these big teams and these big market, these big money players, Pujols, Reyes, Hanley, Cano, why are they kind of struggling early on here?
I think a lot of it has to do with the pressure they put on themselves, especially. You mentioned a lot of those guys are going to a new city. Pujols has all these expectations in a brand new place where people don't know him, and maybe he's struggling with living in L.A. I don't really know. I mean, St. Louis is a pretty big city, too, but it's nowhere near Los Angeles. And so he might even be struggling with his living situation. You never know. I thought it was a good decision the other day. I don't even think he took batting practice yesterday. He wasn't even allowed to pick up a bat. And hopefully he could have, you know, relaxed his mind a little bit and come back strong. You never want to see somebody who's that good struggle like that. But yeah, Reyes too, he moved from a new city. You have all these people with so much expectations. They need to do well. They need to do well right now. And you got a lot of fans who aren't going to give him any slack because they haven't grown in relationship with him over the last couple of years.
I understand what you're saying with Pujols. Do you think that he's going to turn it around? Do you think that maybe Pujols is actually on the age of decline here and the Angels got a bad deal? What is going on out there with Big Albert?
Everyone kind of thinks that he's going to turn around, and I feel like he will eventually. His numbers are not going to be even close to what they've been in the past couple of years. So he will turn it around eventually. Everybody knows that. He's too talented naturally not to be able to turn it around and do what he has to do and come out of this. Maybe next at bat, he'll get a home run. Everybody will shut up. And that's really all he has to do is to get a couple of hits, get a couple of home runs. Everyone will stop talking about his struggle. He can just go about his business. I think he will. But, yeah, I think he's absolutely on the age decline. Everyone talks about his age, whether it's actually true or not. I don't really know about that. I don't think age is really that big of a deal when it gets to the majors. It's just kind of a number. But you can tell that he's getting older. He's getting a little bit more. The whole reaction timing, like I talked about with Teixeira, the same thing happening with him, and how is it all going to affect him as he keeps getting older and older?
Now, going to a team that's actually playing better than expected, the Washington Nationals. Now, we know, or everybody should know, how good their pitching staff has been so far, but they obviously called up Bryce Harper recently. He's got himself a nice full week of baseball or major league experience under his belt. What do you take away from Harper in this first week of the major leagues? He's obviously hitting well, playing well, hustling hard. What is your early assessment of this kid?
I was excited. I think anytime you get a 19-year-old in the league, for me, it's really exciting for Major League Baseball. And being such a big MLB fan, I thought it was awesome, especially for the league. And the Nationals doing as well as they have. You know, a lot of people forget that they were the Expos, and the Expos just, they haven't been good in a really long time. everyone kind of blames it on the 94 strike, but that's a whole other situation. Bryce Harper coming in is awesome. I think especially seeing him with his traditional incredibly thick eye black on, he's feeling more comfortable with the people in his clubhouse. I think he's a smart guy. He's learning from the veterans that are on that team. But at the same time, that whole team's really young. I mean, you have Strasburg who's on there. You have Harper and all these other guys who they're pretty young team, and they're going to need Harper. I think the biggest impression that I got from him wasn't as bad. Everyone kind of knew he could hit and to see how good he is, but people have been walking him. People know that he's hitting really hot right now, and so they want to make sure that they're careful around him. And he hit third the other day. What 19-year-old hits third for a Major League Baseball team in first place in their division? Like that never happens. My favorite thing that I've seen though is his arm. Like, that thing is sick, and it's gonna be a force for a lot of years.
He threw a couple of shots where it's just like, what? Really? Like, really? Now, I'm glad you mentioned that the Nationals are in first place. Obviously, their pitching has a lot to do with that. They have the best starting staff ERA in baseball by far. After the first month of the season, you see how the Phillies are struggling to score runs. You see how the Braves are struggling to really do anything. Do you see the tide of the National League East changing? Do you see the Nationals as the early front runner now after seeing how well the starting staff is pitching?
Yeah, I think they're young enough and arrogant enough to actually take this the entire year. But I still, even after this first month and a couple of days, however long it's been, I still stay with the pick that we both had at the beginning of the year that the Braves are gonna take it. I still feel like that's my pick, even though Jurgens had to be set down and he's not obviously living up to the potential that he has. But Washington's young enough, and they might just feel like, why not us? And they don't really concern themselves with anybody else, and they just go out and play.
Now, what's the best way to say this? If the Red Sox, if the Nationals are in September have the best record in the NL East and they're in first place, and say they're in first place by a game and a half, do you see them actually sitting Strasburg? Are they going to go for gold here?
Personally, I hope that they just kind of keep with him. I wouldn't want him sitting. I think he's got a similar build to Verlander. Even though he got hurt and Verlander hasn't, and hopefully that never happens. Oh my gosh, I shouldn't have said that. But Strasburg, I think, has that type of mentality that he never wants to be taken out of a game. He never wants to let up on anything. He's learning a little bit more to start off, 94, 95 in the beginning of a game, and then bring it on a lot more near the end. And so I think they need to keep him in the game, keep his momentum going, and that's just going to mess with his head if they rest him, even though it might even be the right move to do. But if you're going to throw all your eggs in this basket, you can't take him out.
Now, is there a team, say the Nationals actually make the playoffs, is there a team in baseball scarier than them in a short series? You have to look around the league, and how many teams, maybe the Phillies, besides the Phillies, I can't think of a team with better starting staff than them. And obviously this team is a little bit younger. If the Nats can make the playoffs, do you consider them possibly the favorites to win the whole thing with that staff in a short series?
Yeah, it's going to be – oh, my gosh. It'll be really a great series to watch, that's for sure. I think some of the veterans around the league, even the White Sox, they've been doing a lot better than I thought they were. I thought Jake Peavy's throwing the ball pretty well. But once they get to a short series, I think some veterans are going to be able to take over and actually show the Nationals their experience. And so maybe once they get into the playoffs, the lights and everything and all the focus that's on them might get to them a little bit. But I see them being cocky enough that the Nationals are just a scary team. I think they're scary for everybody that they're going to play, especially when you get down the stretch. And you got Phillies who I think are going to come back. I mean, when you have pitchers like Roy Halladay, like Cole Hamels, like Cliff Lee, even though they're having their injury struggles a little bit and they need to get everybody healthy, that's still a nasty team.
Awesome, buddy. Great stuff today, as always. And we look forward to talking to you. Actually, probably in 2 weeks, we're not going to be on the air next week. We're taking a break for Mother's Day.
I like it. Go spend some time with your mom. She deserves it.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you later.
Yes, sir.
As always, John Amola, great stuff. And you can always follow him in his great charity work Just give us an email or give us a call. We'll patch you through to him. So we are about here. We have a couple more minutes left. Just want to recap everything. We talked earlier about Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather possibly fighting, with Mayweather, I think, setting up for this this excuse. But we'll see with that. Right now, Floyd Mayweather has just taken Miguel Cotto's junior welterweight belt. Washington playoffs today. They get underway here in about 4 minutes with the Bulls taking on the 76ers. They're down there in Philly. Right now, the Bulls are down 2-1. Then you have the Knicks about to get swept by the Heat. You have the Celtics and the Hawks, and then finish up with the Lakers and the Nuggets. So it's a complete ball night on NBA basketball, full playoff scale. And then obviously check out what the Yanks are doing. Check out what baseball's going on. Check out how the Yankees come back from this loss of Mariano Rivera. So I am your host, Dave Mignano. This is The World According To. It was a great show. We will be off next weekend because of Mother's Day, but we will be back the weekend after that. So we will talk to you in 2 weeks with the best baseball news, the best talk, the best sports news in the country. We should have some more clarity on what's going on with the NBA playoffs as we will be well into round two. So, again, this is your host, Dave Mignano. Thanks for joining us. We will talk to you in 2 weeks. This is The World According To. Turn the music up. Turn the lights down. I'm in my zone.